Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast, episode 370. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
And Phil Wilson.
Yeah, well, I'm here.
Oh, no bushy tail, huh?
All right. So how was your trip?
You know, the trip was great. 1,265 miles driving around northern Minnesota.
Wow. And being a hypermiler, he did that on one tank of gas.
No, 52.5 mpg, though.
Wow.
On the whole trip. But it was, one day I'm in Ely, and then one day I'm in, driving the Gunflint Trail, and then another day I'm just out and about taking photos. I took 1,600 and some photos, and I like about 40 of them. You know how that goes.
That seems about right.
Yeah, that's a good percentage.
No side trips up to Canada?
No, you know, and I am thinking, I've been actually planning routes to see how far I can get north up toward Churchill, up toward Hudson Bay. And it turns out there are no roads that go all the way to Churchill. there are ad hoc roads, but you need, a Humvee or something to get through there. Toyota Prius probably wouldn't cut the mustard. So I actually had some challenges. I drove down this logging road to go to get to this moose trail. There's some moose trail with an observation deck and all that. And I drive down this logging road, and I get way back in the back, and all of a sudden I realize there's no, I can't turn around. And so, you know, I could either, you know, do one of my maneuvers where you're doing beep, beep, going forward, backwards, but I backed up about half a mile to get out of this logging road, because it got to the point where there's no way I'm gonna destroy my car.
Oh, my.
It's just too low. So, anyway, It was an adventure. I got to tell you, though, that northern Minnesota used to feel like there was nobody around for miles and miles and miles. And now, no matter where you go, there are people. I mean, there are cabins and houses and the little fire signs, you know, with the numbers on them so that you can locate somebody's property. They're on every road. I mean, they're everywhere. There's almost like I know the Boundary Waters Wilderness exists, but, thank God that got protected, because the encroachment is everywhere, and ATV trails, and it's pretty amazing. So
yep. We were up there a couple of months ago, and I was surprised at how much development there was, but a lot of them were these funky resorts or campgrounds, so it's not terribly out of hand at the moment, but
yeah. Well, I mentioned it to a buddy of mine too, and he said, Steve, go there in January and then tell me what you think.
Right.
There's nobody there.
Well, and Grand Marais, when we were up there, like half the restaurants close in October.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because there's nobody there.
Right. It has to be pretty bad if you're up there wintering.
Right. Right. Well, we should get to tech stories, boys.
All right.
Tim, did you put this in the lead story here?
It was one that Julio, of course, was on with us last week, and this is one that
you heard the stuff he said about you last week, Steve.
I listened to the show. Was this not being recorded last week? Is that what,
okay. Well, I had to do some edits. So anyway, after the show early last week, he teamed up with one of his colleagues at the Pioneer Press and put this story together about a St. Paul teen's suicidal Facebook Live session that happened, I guess, last weekend or early this week.
She was live streaming it?
Live streaming, apparent suicide. And of course, you know, a lot of people called the authorities. They did, the police did get involved. And thankfully, she didn't drink the poison, apparently, even though it's not 100% clear in the story, but it seems like she just needed some help and got it. And I just thought this brings up lots of ethical questions, lots of privacy questions. Obviously, you do want to help someone that's like this, but this is akin to someone going to a public square and trying to hang themselves. And of course, you know, people would intervene in that kind of situation. So with video and social media, it brings up a kind of a different spin to that whole thing.
Well, it does, because they have to, in a lot of cases, violate someone's privacy to be able to enter their dwelling and, you know, things like that. But, you know, I mean, it's well within the charter of law enforcement that, you know, if they suspect that there's a suicide or a murder or a assault and battery going on behind a locked door, that they can kick the door open and go in and stop it. Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, I can see this thing all playing out, but my biggest concern is people copycatting, mm-hmm. you know, and thinking, well, hey, you know, what a great place to kill yourself. Everyone.
Yeah. The story does bring up a situation in France that was recently, and someone actually did commit suicide on, I think it was Periscope. So yeah, it's definitely, we're going to see more and more things like this, I think, unfortunately.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
well, on more of an upbeat story, perhaps, Target's IT chief, has set a new direction. Good article in the Star Tribune. And
yeah, this is in last Sunday's paper.
Right. And what I loved about this is the fact that Mike McNamara, who's the new CIO at Target, two things out of the story is, one, he walked into Brian Cornell's office and said, you know, my budget's too big. You've got to cut me back. And Brian Cornell basically saying, maybe for the first time in my career, I had somebody walk in and said, Brian, I've got too much capital to spend. I want to give some dollars back. Yeah. But he had identified that there were 800 IT projects going on concurrently. And he said, you know, even a company as big as Target doesn't have 800 priorities. So he cut it back to 80. That he's been bringing IT back in-house rather than having it be outsourced. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, you know, he's really nailing it. He's beefing up the staff like crazy. And I think we're going to see some really interesting technology innovation happening at Target.
Yeah, he came from Tesco. It's a big chain in the UK, sort of like Walmart. He's just doing the same thing that he did for Tesco. And he doesn't, you know, he simplified their focus, and he doesn't need as much money.
Yeah.
To implement, you know, some changes, and they're doing a lot more inside than they've done. They've spent, I guess the last two CIOs have spent a lot of outsourcing money, and they've, you know, taken their staff down quite a bit, and now he's moving in the other direction. And, you know, he brings up that you really have to own it, and, you know, for them to innovate and compete against Amazon, you really do.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Well, I remember at United Health Group when they had their United Healthcare IT silo, United Health Technologies, they had about 600 Accenture people that they were outsourcing with. And, you know, the CEO, the new CEO comes in, basically says, hey, get rid of them. You know, I mean, this is just nuts. They've got no stake in the future of the company. In terms of where it's going, they're just doing tasks, and, it's costing us a fortune to have all these outsourced people, and let's bring this back in house. It's too important.
Yep.
And that's where they started moving that. That was probably 10 years ago, 11 years ago.
Well, there's pluses and minuses of doing outsourcing, and you really have to balance it out with what your goals are. So,
right.
You know, I think they're finding where that balance is right now.
Yep, exactly. Well, and in another, I thought, big story, one that continues to make my wife cry because she still owns too much Stratasys stock.
I was going to say, Mrs. Borsch.
You told her to.
Yeah, I know.
Mrs. Borsch will be happy, but it's still not, you know, super good news.
Yeah, it's moving in the right direction. Their Q2 cost-cutting moves continue their turnaround. So they only lost $18.7 million compared to, what was it, $239 million loss last year, or?
Yeah, they only lost $42 million. So
that's good.
Instead of $240 million.
Right, right.
Yeah, so they're moving in the right direction, but they still lost a lot of money.
Sorry, well, Steve, you're still going to be cut off for a little while longer.
Yeah, no kidding. But you know, in a lot of ways, when they bought MakerBot, I kind of scratched my head. I remember we kind of talked about this on one of the podcasts about the wisdom of moving into the 3D printing space for consumers, because it's, you know, it was cool and it's really neat, and it's basically a toy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty tough to make anything that's actually useful.
And people that are really good at that space, you know, that have the channel of distribution and the know-how to how to make a consumer good, like Hewlett-Packard and Canon, they're coming into that space. So for Stratasys to compete with that is not going to be easy.
Right.
So they're moving to the high end, which is, you know, where they should stay, because they don't have as much competition. The channels of distribution aren't as big of a problem there as it is in the consumer.
Well, and like I've told the story again about Jay Leno's garage, where they've got the Stratasys 3D printer, and they're making parts with it that you can't get anymore, and they can match the color of the ivory radio knobs from a 1942 Cadillac, and you know, and all those sorts of things. I mean, those are the kind of people that are going to buy, or the kinds of organizations that are going to buy 3D printers.
Yeah, it's a service bureau, or it's a specialized application, like what they do in what Leno does with his cars.
Yeah, well, it's going to continue to happen. It's just going to take time, a lot of time. But okay, so who found this next story? High tech firm Secret Valet makes simple data storage obsolete. I think it goes beyond data storage, because the thing is, and this just came up. This just came up because my daughter asked me. She said, "So, Dad, what happens to all your videos and your photos?" Because I was doing photos from the trip, and more importantly, what about all the passwords? I mean, if you died on this trip, I hate to say, how would mom get into all your stuff? And I said, well, I share LastPass with her, and LastPass. And so she's got access to banking and Schwab and all this stuff. Right. And she could goes, you, okay, but what if,
those, could you share those passwords with us?
Right, yeah, now? Sure. Sure. It's ampersand, 1 4 9 No. But then she said the big thing was, okay, so if that happens, what if you and mom take off for your anniversary this September and the plane goes down? And I said,
wow, well, boy, your daughter is really,
she's thinking ahead.
She's got a downbeat there.
Well, we were pretty open in the family, but the point was, is when, I started to look at the Secret Valet this morning, that's the name of the company. I thought this is absolutely brilliant, because basically what they've set up is the ability to, you know, put this stuff online in an encrypted container called a capsule. And if you die, it will go to, you know, your recipient, and they'll be able to access it. But they're talking about, you know, important corporate documents and health directives and wills and power of attorney and family photos and videos and blah, 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 blah.
So question for you, though.
Yeah.
As I'm not 100% sure. It looks like the way they see if you're dead or not is by sending you text messages to check if you're still alive.
Hey,
you're
still alive?
Yeah.
I mean, is that it? I mean, so what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if your phone is not working for, like, you know, I've had problems with my phone where I haven't gotten voicemails or I haven't gotten text messages.
Yeah. Or you're up in the boundary waters, so your phone doesn't work.
You know, what happens if that triggers the event and all of a sudden you come home and everything's wiped out?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, no, they wouldn't wipe it out, but and then,
I mean,
it went to somebody. Sure.
Your family got all your passwords and you came in. Crap.
Right.
Or Secret Valet goes out of business.
I think that's the biggest concern. Yeah.
But you know, I've often looked at having a dead man switch. And, you know, the dead man switch is, you know, if you have to keep if you're a train engineer and you're driving the train and you have a heart attack and fall over and die, that you fall off and you let go of the switch and the train stops, it comes to a stop, you know, it just has no power anymore. It's called a dead man switch. Right. And a dead man switch with technology and all these different documents and all that, same sort of thing. You know, if you die, then, you know, what happens to your life and all the stuff that's moving forward. You know, I look at the fact that I got all these clients and all these contracts, and Michelle's the same way. And, you know, so what happens if the plane goes down and we're gone, and the kids have to deal with closing the business and, you know, making people whole on their transactions and all that stuff, you know, at least or even informing them that this happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
anyway, yeah. I saw this come out this week. It's, you know, local story. I'm wondering, though, how much secret sauce is in this? I know that it says in their release here that they do have some patents pending, but couldn't Apple do something like this pretty easily as well and just advertise it as yet another feature and another reason you should use iCloud?
I would say probably.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how much legs this has or how unique this is, or if there could be an exit where, you know, an Apple or Google buys them maybe at some point in the future, but it's an interesting idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's really needed too, because it's, you know, I just had somebody ask me about their computer, their iMac, that they've got a very long super secret password on it, and it's not written down anywhere for obvious reasons. And the same thing was, well, if I die, then who can get into it? Nobody. And you know, you gotta start to think of that stuff.
Arthur, that also the what I think I'm always thinking about is when you passed, and this, you know, happened, kind of faced me 3 years ago when my mom passed away. It was like, get, you know, that simple opportunity to just you know, erase everything from social media, you know, close all of the social media accounts. Now, honestly, my mother didn't have a lot of social media accounts. She had a couple, but
yeah.
But you and I, you know, the three of us and most people have multiple social media accounts. What would be, it would be nice if there was a quick way of just gutting that, just saying, okay, well, this person has passed, shut it all down. I wonder how you go about doing that.
Well, you could, that sounds like a good app idea, where you could have a web app that uses all the APIs of these various social networks and aggregates them. Mm-hmm. And you have one kill switch where it just takes them all down. Maybe you could put up, you know, your final message and have some sort of a memorial that goes, you know, that stays up for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's it. And then it all goes away.
You know, I'm sure there's, you know, you know that when you come up with an idea like this, you know, it's come up with a couple of times before. So there's got to be something out there. So
I would assume there would be. I can't imagine that we're, you know, coming up with this idea, this original idea right here.
Well, you know, there is
it's really not like us.
No, but you know, I mean, here's the other thing that I find kind of interesting is, so I've got well over 2,000 posts on my own blog, Connecting the Dots, and I also have all my podcasts that I did. I did a year and a half of podcasting, and I have all those, and they're all on my server, and that server, you know, I'm paying about $150 a month for this server, and, you know, if I were to die, my wife would obviously keep that running because our business is on it as well. But, you know, at some point it's going to get shut down. And what happens to my blog? Well, I've taken it and there's a service that allows you, I paid them $25 and they allow you to, essentially encapsulate your entire blog in a PDF, and do it. But I thought, how cool would it be, for example, to listen to my great, great grandfather's podcast, you know, about what was happening in the day.
Your great grandfather had a podcast? Really?
Well, I wish he had. Or even my great grandfather, or even my grandfather's, either one of them. I mean, it would be just fun to listen to, them and, you know, I mean, how cool would it be to listen to your grandfather talk about, you know, this new baby Phil, and how he felt about having this new grandson, you know, and I mean, seriously, how cool would that be? No, I, you know, other than, yeah, no, you know, right, yeah. He's so wonderful. He looks like Edward G. He looks like Edward G. Robinson.
You're talking about in the future, somebody could listen to your podcast.
Correct.
So, yes. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it'd be great, but I mean, that stuff's going to live on forever. Even if you say, okay, this great service that we have wipes everything out, it doesn't really wipe it out. It removes links to it possibly, but you know, it's all still out there. So,
well,
you'll be able to find, we'd be able to find some trace of you, Steve. There's no doubt.
Well, you could upload your stuff to archive.org and it should live up there for long period of time.
Right. Well, actually, that's going to be
a real good resource to future generations. I think
I do too. Well, you know, when I did, when my dad died, I did tribute number two, you know, the tribute to dad.wordpress.com. And, I put it there and there's ads, excuse me. If you go to the posts, there's ads that, you know, they put ads at the bottom. And so, you know, that's one of the downsides, but I don't have to pay any money. And so, you know, if I go, this thing's still going to be there. And so that, you know, I found that to be really an incredibly interesting thing to do, is to have something that will live on. Because, you know, it's unlikely that WordPress.com is going to just vanish. Mm. So.
Boy, the podcast has taken a morose turn.
No, it's a realistic.
We started with suicide, and now we're talking about Steve's death.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, you know what? None of us are going to get out of here alive. So let's think about this stuff while we can.
That's not the plan I have.
Get us back on track here. What about the Olympics in this carpet?
What about this?
I saw this piece, and it was like, you know, this happens all the time. This is a big deal every time the Olympics come around. And it's also a big deal anything around the NFL, because a lot of these sports franchises and these sports committees are very protective of their content and their trademark. And I found it interesting that ZeroRes, which is a local company here, has decided they're going to sue the U.S. Olympic Committee over being banned from using things like Rio 2016 in their social media posts. And I just found it interesting. This is really akin to tilting at windmills, but and they probably can easily be crushed like a bug just being outspent. But you know, the fact that somebody says, "Hey, you know, I'm really getting tired of this," and really steps up and says, "You know, I really want to be able to say Rio 2016 on a post I might make." So I just found it interesting.
You can't. Yeah, but no. I don't care who you are. You can't trademark a hashtag.
Yes, you can.
They did.
Really?
I mean, I'm doing Olympic social media right now, and I can't use these hashtags.
Yep.
Seriously.
Nope. Even though I'm working for the broadcaster who spent billions of dollars to, you know, to broadcast the Olympics.
You're working for NBC now?
Comcast, NBC, Universal.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
So it's you have to be very careful, and there's some lines, and you can get really close to the lines.
I got served back in the radio days because we were doing a Final Four contest. So,
yeah. So if you're an individual, no problem. Use hashtags and whatever terms you want. But if you're a business, you got to be careful.
Yep.
Yeah. That's true.
So I applaud ZeroRes for going after it. I think it's a bit of a waste of money, but that's, you know, somebody's got to take on City Hall, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And next time I need my carpets clean, I might call these guys.
I use these guys. These guys are okay.
They're good?
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. And the name is, you know, spelled backwards and forwards the same. So,
yeah.
That's crazy. Incredible. So I buried Paul.
Thank you. Other tech stories, Windows 10's anniversary update now available. Two or three people that are using it, get out there. No, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I don't know.
This is a big upgrade. It's huge. Yeah.
Well, you know, the Windows 10 free update ended in July, but then some people have found ways around that where you can still get it.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't read because I don't care. I haven't read the articles, but somebody did a hack to allow that to occur. But so what's the big deal about this anniversary update, Tim?
It's a big update. There's lots of improvements, especially for those of us who use the Surface tablets.
Okay.
They have a new ink feature that I'm excited to start to use. And, you know, the number of other things, they've kind of smoothed it out. So Windows 10 is really maturing as an operating system, and it's very good. It's the best version of Windows ever. Hmm. And it's a very close to Mac OS as far as ease of use, speed, features, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They've also baked Cortana, which is their version of Siri, into the operating system deeply, and it's no longer, you know, an option. It's now it's turned on by default. So I think we're going to see more and more moves in that direction, where you do have these voice interfaces as, you know, as becoming a primary interface to the operating system.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, I just,
anyway, we talk a lot about Apple here, and I just wanted to give Microsoft their due.
Well, and it's
good for you.
You know, Office 365 for the Mac is other than the monthly updates that are about a gig or gig and a half. Other than that, Office 365 for the Mac is fabulous. I mean,
it's really good.
It's really good. The only issue I have with Windows 10 is the unbelievable security and privacy issues with it. The stuff you have to turn off. I just,
there's always something with you, Steve.
You know, always. I know. I know.
He lives in fear.
I wish. No, but here's the thing. I feel like I'm some sort of security survivalist, and I've got my little arsenal here, and I'm all set and all that. And then they come in with Black Hawk helicopters and tanks and you know, and drones with missiles and all that. And like, I'm going to defend against that, right? I mean, it's almost like that. That's what privacy and security is today. And that was kind of my segue, by the way, into stuff later on. But yes. But so the other big story was Apple's new TV plan as a TV guide, and I thought that was really interesting, because the it was so brain dead obvious when they said in this, you know, the comments or Eddie Q had said that, you know, nobody wants to channel surf by going through all the apps separately. You know,
right.
I mean, you don't want one app for every network, because there's no way. I mean, you can't see what's on, or you can't see what's available. You got to have one central place that taps into everything, right? And that makes perfect sense. But you know, are they going to get people to play ball?
I think so. More and more of these services are live TV services. Hulu is moving in that direction, where they're going to have everybody but CBS basically live, and it will be a Sling TV style service.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll have a monthly fee, probably around $20. And, you know, if you have that, and say you have Netflix, and there's several other, like Sky comes to mind, where they have, you know, it's a streaming, live streaming service. The CNN, same thing. So to have a unified guide, that you could just move to this guide to say, okay, what's on right now, and see what sporting event or what, you know, what shows are on. And then it fires up when you choose it, it fires up the right app to view that. I think that's a great idea. And it's a way that Apple can make the Apple TV, you know, more of the standard interface in the living room than than it is currently.
Well, here's what I found interesting. I ended up going to T-Mobile for my iPad Pro. You know, just chose a service because they had a 5 gig thing for $10, and so I bought that in May. Mm-hmm. And so here I am up north, and I had you know, a couple gigs left, and so each night, you know, about 8 o'clock at night, I'd start watching stuff on Netflix, and there was just enough bandwidth so I could stream, even though it was pixelated. And so the second morning I got up and I thought, oh, I'm at 4.7 gigs already used. That's not going to work. And so I ended up buying the 6 gig plan from T-Mobile for $35 a month. And they have this huge list of binge on providers. Yeah. Netflix and Hulu and Fox and HBO and PBS and blah, 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 blah. All these providers that you can watch stuff and stream it, and it does not impact your monthly data.
Nope.
And so it was like, oh, that's cool. So one night I was not tired, and I watched four back-to-back shows, 4 hours worth of shows, and that would have burned up well over a gig, and it didn't touch my data plan. So that was cool. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's there's some interesting stuff going on. Anyway, we should talk about the cool thing of the week.
Okay.
I always love this segment. And
I want to start with Tim because I'm very intrigued by Tim's cool thing this week.
So mine is the Brave browser. It is a web browser for the Mac, but they also have a number of other different platforms, and I've started to use their Android browser as well. It's made for blocking ads and for speed, and it is very, very fast. And it does render pages, I think, significantly faster than anything else out there, although it's Safari is pretty close, to be honest. It bakes in the security. So you have HTTPS everywhere baked in by default. You don't have to add it. It's just yet another alternative out there if you're worried about your privacy and you want to block ads. It's a very good-looking product. The issue and the reason that I can't use it as my primary browser is that they haven't done anything with extensions yet. They're working on it, though, and they're looking to implement most of the Firefox extensions. So if they did that, then this might be my default browser.
So is it based on WebKit or Gecko?
You know, I don't know what it's based on. I think it is based on Gecko. So that's why they're actually doing the thing with
the Firefox.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
It is fast. Holy buckets. I just downloaded it and opened it.
Yeah. And, no, it's very fast.
Holy buckets.
That's very interesting. Cool. That is a cool thing of the week, buddy.
Yep.
Nice.
So let's just go ahead and get it. It's free.
Let's keep on the privacy bent here with Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, wow. Okay. It is. So I just, I follow all these security researchers in Feedly, my news feed reader. And I came across this ultimate privacy guide.
Which I thought was really good.
Yeah. It was they've really, this Best VPN, they spent a lot of time on it. And also privacytools.io. And between the two of those, I've learned so many things. Just this I just found when I was up one morning sipping coffee. I'm 30 feet from Lake Superior and the waves are coming in and it's raining. And I thought, what better time? Just sit and read and poke around and do stuff. So I did that for like 4 hours and came across this. And I read that through the entire thing. And I also downloaded a bunch of the tools and have adopted some new practices, actually, and I won't go into them. But if you're interested at all in security and privacy, just read through that Ultimate Privacy Guide and then take a look at these privacy tools. And there could be some things in there that you might find very useful.
Mm-hmm. Real-time follow-up here on my Brave browser. It's based on Chromium, so it's based on
the
Chrome browser, and it uses Blink. But the guy who's behind it used to be the CEO of Mozilla. So that's where I got the Firefox stuff from. He's the one that had to resign because he gave money to anti-gay causes, I guess, or something in California. Right. Remember a while ago. So,
yep.
Anyway, so I guess they'll be able to bake in Chrome extensions at some point.
Yeah.
So if they do that, I'm in.
There you go.
So, Phil, you have something from FeedBuzz? Or, I mean, BuzzFeed?
Yes, FeedBuzz.
And what is that?
I thought this was a very handy article. I enjoyed it. Just basically a how-to to watch the Olympics if you don't own a TV. You basically, really get unfettered access, you do really have to have some sort of a cable login. But there are some other opportunities and other options for you to watch.
Go to a bar.
You can go to a bar, and there's actually a link.
Buffalo Wild Wings. Come on.
Help you. Find bars that are streaming it and that sort of thing. Yeah, so it's just sort of a little guide to everything you need to know about watching the Olympics without a TV.
Over the air is always an option.
It is always an option. So,
well, and I read a blog post about, and it was all conjecture, so I'll just say that up front, but that this cable login piece will be a just it'll all be rolled into the internet package as well, so that, you know, if you pay a Delta for your, so if you're paying $60 a month or 50 or whatever number you're paying for your internet access, you'll add $10 to that and you'll have cable login capability, even if you don't have a cable TV subscription. And I thought that that seems obvious, doesn't it? That'll happen. And that will be great. Then people that are, you know, like my daughter, she has a nice Best Buy HD antenna that actually looks better than the cable feed, by the way. So if you want to watch the channels in HD, and
it's uncompressed over the air.
Yeah, it is. And so she does that. And we've been talking about her getting the TiVo box that does over the air recordings.
Yep.
Can't remember the name of it now.
Romeo.
Romeo.
They make one that's $50.
Yeah. And because there's some stuff that she'd like to record off the air and then be able to fast forward through it. And cool stuff.
It is cool stuff.
Very cool.
Good one.
All right. Nothing really new in the upcoming events. So, but I think that we have, well, let's see, we've got Amazon Splash, which is this week. So I'll be heading to that. Let you know how that goes. And
we'll talk
about anything else that kind of comes up over the next week. Next week on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Have a good week.
Take care. Thanks.